Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hey, readers and writers, thanks for joining me today, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for episode number 47 of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Got a good one for you today. The indie author is Rick Partlow, and the title from which I'll be reading is Recon, Book One, A War to the Knife. If you're remotely interested in space marines, military sci-fi, sci-fi colonization, check this series out. He's got a boxed set, the complete Recon series collection, four novels, usually priced at $6.99, will be just 99 cents on Amazon from the 20th until the 25th of this month here in February of 2018. So that's going on sale to 99 cents in just a couple of days. There's a lot of reading to get through today, so I'm just going to jump right in with Rick's Amazon author bio. He writes, "I am that rarest of species, a native Floridian. I was born in Tampa in 1966, the son of a Baptist preacher. Dad was in his early 40s when I was born and had been the nose gunner on a B-24 bomber in World War II. He had been shot down over the Ploesti oil fields, bailed out of his bomber, and spent nearly a year in a POW camp. Needless to say, his stories had quite the effect on me as a child, as did the tales of Robert Heinlein, whose juvenile novels shaped my adolescence. I fell in love with science fiction early. I attended Florida Southern College on an ROTC scholarship and graduated with a BA in history and a commission in the Army. I served as an infantry platoon leader with the 25th ID in Hawaii before getting out and bouncing around from one job to another for a while before settling on teaching. And through that whole time, I was writing. I wrote my first novel, a wretched espionage thriller slash action story, in 10th grade. My second, a wish fulfillment adventure story, as a senior in high school. They were both horrible, and both written longhand on notebook paper, and I threw them both away at some point while I was in college. It was in college that I began writing my first science fiction novel. I began writing a story I called Rituals, which later, after many, many years and many revisions, became Duty, Honor, Planet. At the same time, I came up with a plot for a book that would later be the basis for the characters of Birthright. After getting out of the army, I finished the books and got a literary agent, but couldn't break into the genre. So I shelved them and gave up on getting published. Then came the advent of ebooks and the opportunity to self-publish on Amazon. And I figured, what the heck? What was there to lose? And the strangest thing happened. People bought the two books. Lots of people. And they liked them. That lit a fire under my butt to write even more. And 14 months later, I finished the sequel to Duty, Honor, Planet, titled Honor Bound. It took another 15 months to finish the third and, for the moment, last book in the series, The Line of Duty, which just came out in July of 2014. I also completed the Birthright trilogy, publishing the second book, Northwest Passage, and the third and final one, Enemy of My Enemy. I recently finished Glory Boy, a military science fiction novel featuring the wartime experiences of Caleb Mitchell, the main character from the Birthright books. My latest series is the Recon books, featuring a Recon Marine named Randall Monroe. The first book, A War to the Knife, tells the story of his wartime experiences trapped behind enemy lines on the occupied Demeter colony. I released the final book in the series, Recon Book 4, A Fight to the Death, in August of 2017. I recently began a new series, starting with a prequel called Last Flight of the Acheron, detailing the wartime experiences of fleet pilots Sandy Holland and Ash Carpenter. I just released the official Book 1 in the Tales of the Acheron, a space opera adventure called Prodigal, and I'm already working on Book 2. Follow my progress on my website at www.rickpartlow.com or visit my Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dutyhonorplanet. Or follow me on Twitter at rickpartlow66. I live in Central Florida with my wife of 20-plus years, our two children, and a willful mutt of a dog. All right, there is Rick Partlow's Amazon author bio. He really tells you the whole story. What I kind of like about this is you get a rundown of his self-publishing history. That is wild to me, Rick, that you wrote your first novel in 10th, like a whole book in 10th grade? I mean, like, how many words, man? It's like over 40,000. It boggles the mind to have that much focus in 10th grade. Good on ya. I imagine that Rick's actual military experience and the sort of military tradition in his family has really helped his novels, which, if not always jammed directly into military sci-fi, definitely always have a military sci-fi element. More often, it seems like space marine. I see space colonization as well. But yeah, like there's some hard military happening here, for which we know there is a rabid fan base, which I don't know. I don't have numbers on this, but I it would make a lot of sense to me if a lot of that fan base consisted of other people with actual military experience who want it told right. Right. So, for example, my own flagship sci-fi series, Starship Fairfax, I made the sort of mistake of billing that as military sci-fi when it came out, because mil sci-fi had been kind of hot for the last 2 years or so, but they're really not hard military at all. They're really kind of action adventure, goofy. I don't really pay any attention to, because I don't have any military experience, so, you know, I don't know. You know, I've gotten a little bit of feedback on that, some helpful critical feedback about how that's kind of biting me in the butt a little on those books. Rick, on the other hand, is legit. he's got the experience to back it up, and he knows what he's talking about. So if you have any interest at all in military science fiction, do yourself a favor, check out Rick Partlow. As I said, the whole collection of these four books in this series will be on sale for 99 cents in just a few days here on the 20th. I'm going to go ahead now and read the book blurb, that is the Amazon book description, to Recon the complete series. The full collection of all four books in the military science fiction Recon series, A War to the Knife, A Wolf in the Fold, A Battle for the Gods, A Fight to the Death. Readers rave about the Recon series. Quote, a very intense book with an uncompromising brutality that adds an air of realism to this military science fiction story, end quote. Quote, Recon, A War to the Knife is a space marine mil sci-fi story reminiscent of Starship Troopers. If you like intergalactic wars and power-armored marines with unshakable good guy morals, don't miss this one, end quote. Quote, exciting from beginning to end, can't wait for the next book to come out, end quote. And quote, as this series grows, so does Partlow's ability to suck you into the universe he has crafted. This is an excellent quick read, and well worth it for any fans of his work, end quote. Tyler Callis is the pampered scion of one of the ruling families of the Corporate Council, the legal monopoly that runs the human commonwealth. His mother has his life planned out with a seat by her side running the conglomerate. Tyler has other ideas. With the help of a great-grandfather who was a United States Marine when there used to be a United States, Tyler changes his face and his identity, becoming Randall Monroe and enlisting in the Fleet Marine Corps, qualifying for the Point of the Sword, Force Recon. Plunged into an interstellar war against the relentless Tani Empire, Monroe is stranded alone on an occupied colony and forced to organize a civilian resistance to the enemy. The year of constant violence and death wears him down, yet sharpens him at the same time. After the war, Monroe once again takes up arms, this time against his will, when his uncle, Andre Damiani, the head of the corporate council, blackmails him into leading a special squad of troubleshooters, eliminating threats to the council business among the criminal cabals in the pirate worlds. But the real enemy is still the council, and Monroe vows to take the fight to them, no matter what the cost. Yeah, so there we go. Some really what I would imagine to be yummy military tropes in there. Obviously, you've got the grandfather who is in the U.S. Marines back when the U.S. existed. So there's a nostalgia element there for the former United States and a tie-in directly to an actual service. And this idea of the main character turning his back on the politicians and the people just in it for the money who use the military, right, for their own ends, and instead actually getting in the trenches with the military. That's got to be like this just very sort of honorable heroism trope that must be very attractive to readers with a military background. I imagine. I say out of ignorance. I find it attractive. I think that sounds like a heck of a character. Really kind of interested in reading more now. In the reading you're going to hear today, it's just the beginning of this hero story. He's quite young. He hasn't made the name and identity change yet, but you're going to be introduced to him and his situation, and I hope you enjoy that. So Rick Partlow is an indie author who I've seen on both K-boards and in the 20 Books to 50K Facebook group. And I've noticed in both arenas that Rick seems to be an author to watch in this subgenre. He's someone who's got that steady trickle of books and is just accumulating fans with every book, has a loyal reader base. People seem to like what he's doing, and he's, he's making some money. So good for you, Rick, getting those readers, getting the books out, satisfying your fans. I also want to mention that Rick has a short story in both The Officer and The Guardian. Those are both science fiction short story anthologies put together by Alastair Shaw, which I bring up because I also have a short story in both The Officer and The Guardian. So I'm going to go ahead and link to those in the show notes. I'll also be linking, as always, to Rick's Amazon author page and to his actual author website. So you can check those out over at http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com. All right. Thank you, Rick, for your service, by the way. I also think it's really cool that after bouncing around from the military that you went into teaching. I am the son of a couple of teachers, so I've got a lot of love and affinity for teachers and the teaching profession. And I'd be curious to know, Rick, if you're still teaching or if you've retired from that and you're just full-time authoring now, because obviously you have a catalog that's growing very nicely. Anyway, if you're listening and you enjoy military science fiction, hey, give us a shout out today over at thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com. The show is also on YouTube, taking comments there, or find me on Twitter at CantankerousBen. Let me know what you think about Rick's stuff. Let me know what you think about mil sci-fi, where the genre's been, where it's going. How hard do you like your military writing in your mil sci-fi? I'm curious to hear about it. I hope you really enjoy this reading, the first chapter of A War to the Knife Book One of Recon. Don't forget, the entire Recon series is on sale for 99 cents, starting on the 20th for, I think, a week. If you're a Kindle Unlimited reader, it looks like you can check out the rest of Rick's catalog without any additional cost. So do that. And thanks, everybody. I'll see you back here again next week for another indie author reading. Recon, Book One, A War to the Knife, by Rick Partlow. Chapter One. Everything was pain and darkness, and all I could hear was the hollow sound of my own breath against the inside of my helmet. I tried to remember where I was and how I'd got here, but my thoughts seemed to be hazy and random. Just flashes of faces I didn't recognize, in settings I couldn't identify. The woods, dark and wet. Dead twigs and detritus crunching under my boots as I maintained my interval, keeping 10 meters between me and the next Marine in line. Scanning the dark with my helmet sensors, infrared and thermal, keeping my Gauss rifle pointed out of the formation. No warning. Just light and fire and screaming in my ears in the headphones of my helmet. Something big and hot on thermal coming in from overhead, and I was shooting at it, knowing I couldn't scratch it even with the tungsten slugs out of my rifle. And then a bright flash, and suddenly I was here, and didn't know where here was. I decided to start with something simple. My name. Randall Monroe. The thought struggled out as if my tortured mind were giving birth to it. My name's Randall Monroe, and I'm a Recon Marine. Flashes of images in my head, looking in a mirror, seeing a narrow, sharp-edged face with slate-gray eyes and sandy brown hair, cut short. I knew it was my face, but it looked wrong. How could my own face be wrong? I had a concussion. That must be it. I was out of my head. I had to be concussed, or maybe it was the blood loss. But that wasn't it. There was another face in my memories, another face in another mirror. This one was less sharp, more rounded, more soft, with dark eyes and long, dark hair. And it went by another name. Not Randall, but Tyler. Tyler Callis. That's who I was.
Tyler!
I blinked and looked away from the brilliant starfield above me, back to the older man, still staking down the tent in the dim glow of a chemical ghost light hanging from the branch of a gnarled tree overhead. The high desert sandstone was brick hard, but his big, gnarled hands pushed the stakes into it effortlessly.
Are you going to stargaze all night long?
Cesar Torres, my great-grandfather, went on, smiling crookedly.
Or are you going to help me set up camp?
Sorry, Gramps, I said, feeling my ears burning a little with embarrassment as I moved back into the circle of light and picked up a tent stake from the pile. It's really beautiful tonight. You can't see any of these stars from Transangelus.
That's why I spend as little time as possible there, Gramps said, his cracked and weathered face twisting into a scowl.
Well, it's one reason among many. I fell silent for a moment, concentrating on stretching the tent's rainfly over it, then connecting its hooks to the stakes.
I snuck another glance around at the high desert night, seeing the outline of a sandstone arch against the frosting of stars. It was so empty out here.
We never see anyone else out here, I mused. Why don't more people spend time away from the cities?
Gramps shot me a look, and I imagined it was the same look he'd given a recruit who'd asked a dumbass question back when he'd been in the Marine Corps of the old United States over a century ago.
"Because it's too damn expensive, boy," he said, as if I should know it. "There aren't any roads out here anymore, not since the big one."
The big one. That was what he called the Sino-Russian War.
"And renting a hopper isn't cheap. Most people never leave the city their whole lives."
Our own hopper squatted silently about 50 meters away from the campsite, its ducted fans still and motionless. We didn't rent it, though. It was a company vehicle assigned to our family.
"But there are a lot of people who work for the corporate council," I tried again. "Mom's friends are always taking shuttles up to the orbitals or visiting the Martian shipyards. Surely they could afford it."
"Yeah, I suppose they could,"
Gramps allowed with a shrug. His sour expression didn't change, though.
"But most of them don't strike me as the outdoors type. Fact is, there's damn few people who have both the desire and the money to enjoy nature anymore."
His face softened a bit, with what I thought was nostalgia crossing it.
"Which is a damn shame, considering that we finally started taking good care of it."
I'd heard that trip down memory lane before, and although I loved hearing Gramps talk about his time in the Marines, hearing him wax poetic about how we saved the polar bears and gorillas wasn't in my top 10 conversation topics.
"Do we have time to practice infiltration techniques?" I asked him, trying not to sound too kid-eager. I was 18 now, after all, about to turn 19.
"Tomorrow," he promised. "Tonight, I want to get a fire going."
I fought back a sigh, not just because we weren't going to be training tonight, but also because a fire meant he wanted to talk about serious adult stuff. But we didn't get to camp out as often as we used to when I was younger, and I didn't want to ruin it by whining, so I went ahead and helped him make the fire with the wood we'd collected. It was a chilly night, anyway. Early spring in western Utah could get pretty damn cold. I was dressed for it, but a fire would feel good.
"Ty," he said, as he sat down on one of the rocks we'd pulled up around the fire ring.
He was the only one who called me Ty. My mom didn't like it, so everyone who worked for her, including my tutors and the teachers in the corporate school I attended, called me Tyler. Even my girlfriend did, which bothered me sometimes.
"You're about to graduate from primary education," Gramps went on, dark eyes regarding me with the look that he had when he was about to give advice. "You've got a decision to make."
"You mean college," I said, hissing out a frustrated breath as I felt anger from days before return unabated. "I've been talking to Mom about it. I told her I wanted to apply to the Service Academy, but she said I've already been accepted to the Commonwealth Institute of Corporate Administration, and I shouldn't throw away that kind of opportunity."
"Your mother has the rest of your life planned out for you, Ty," Gramps told me. "The question is, do you have plans of your own?"
I was silent for a moment,
hearing nothing but the crackling of the fire, and letting it draw my gaze into its red glow.
"I want to go to the academy," I told him. "I want to be a marine officer."
"Then apply," he urged me, a bit of impatience creeping into his voice.
"You don't need her permission. You're a legally emancipated adult now. You can vote, you can marry, and you can join the military."
I nodded. He was right. The choice was mine to make.
"Thing is," I said, holding my hands palms up, "I want to serve in the military, but I wouldn't mind working for the corporate council someday. I wish she could understand that. I feel like she thinks I'm betraying her if I don't go to the academy."
"Patrice is someone used to making decisions," Gramps said, diplomatically, and I snorted at the euphemism.
"Mom's a control freak, and you know it," I corrected him, "even if she is your granddaughter."
Gramps had to chuckle at that, and I saw a bit of the old twinkle in his eyes.
"All right, but she's still your mother, and she loves you. She wants the best for you, but she wants her version of the best."
He shrugged.
"And she's a very intelligent woman, or she wouldn't be executive vice president of the corporate council. Don't underestimate her, Ty."
I felt my eyes narrow at the way he'd said that. It sounded more like a warning and less like a compliment.
"So," I said carefully, not wanting to misjudge his tone,
"you think I should apply to the academy without telling her?"
Gramps cocked his head a certain way that told me he wasn't going to answer that question.
"As an adult," he replied, "you have to make decisions such as that for yourself.
I will say this, though. The Tawny Imperium slaughtered 500,000 humans on the disputed worlds just 2 years ago, and 90% of the population of the solar system barely knows we're at war. The only reason your mother is aware of it is that the increased military orders have been good for the bottom line."
"What do you mean?" I asked him. "You think we need to be more involved with what's happening to the people in the colonies?"
"Nothing so esoteric," he said darkly.
"What I mean, Ty, is that if we don't get more involved, it won't be happening in the colonies. It'll be right here, on our doorstep, and then it may be too late."
I watched the footage over and over, running the news segment again and again in the holo tank. It had been caught by a security monitor at the Martian shipyards and transmitted to the archives on the surface before the camera and the patrol orbiter that had held it had been destroyed. It was a beautiful panning shot of the Midway, the latest battlecruiser in the Commonwealth Space Fleet. She was an angry, angular wedge of power and death, constrained by the construction scaffolding still surrounding her, swarmed with workers in maneuverable pods like ants crawling around the carcass of a beetle out in the Utah desert. There was no warning at all. Just a white flash expanding into a sun-bright globe of fire that swallowed the Midway and everything for a kilometer around her. It had been a ship-killer missile, a weapon the size of a starship with its own anti-proton drive and defense shields. The Tawny ship that had launched it wasn't visible in the shot, but I knew it had to have been one of their missile boats, a specialized ship that basically provided the ship-killers with a ride through transition space to their target. It would have been more efficient to just put a transition drive on the missile itself, but the Tawny religion didn't allow for either artificial intelligence or armed drones, and I guess they weren't big on suicide, either.
I'd gotten all that from Gramps. I'd called him the minute the news had come in about the Tani attack on the Martian shipyard, what they were calling the Battle for Mars. President Jameson had made a speech, made it sound like a victory that we'd taken out several of the attacking squadron and hadn't let them destroy the shipyards, but Gramps had known better. We'd lost the Midway and three cruisers in for routine maintenance, which represented a pretty big chunk of our fleet. Gramps had sounded pissed and a little scared. It was the first time I'd heard him sound scared. I turned the holotank off. There was no new footage. My link would let me know if anything popped up on the nets, and I'd seen enough of this. It was making my stomach twist up. I walked out of the theater room. The lights in the hallway outside of it gradually rising as I stepped through. By the time I'd reached the solarium, my eyes had adjusted enough for the windows to ease their polarization and let more of the afternoon sun into the penthouse apartment. I stared out at the view from the transplaz windows that made up most of the north wall of the solarium, feeling like I was seeing it for the first time. Trans Angeles stretched out before me, beneath me really, since this was one of the tallest buildings in the megalopolis, out past the horizon. Capital City was the oldest of the hypercities, built only a few years after the founding of the Commonwealth, but Trans Angeles was the largest. Its interconnected structure sprawled out over a full 20 kilometers on a side. The corporate, council-owned Damani Tower, topped by our apartment, was the tallest point at 400 meters up, while the deepest was the same distance underground. 50 million people lived inside its confines, more than half the population of the province of Pacifica. Gramps had told me that this one hypercity held as many people as used to live in the entire state of Old California, back before the Sino-Russian War. I wasn't a kid anymore. I knew not everyone got to live the way Mom and I did, but even the Chawners on the Dole, living off the free soy and algae paste in an underground apartment the size of our bathroom, went to sleep at night believing they were safe, that the Commonwealth would protect them. Would they still believe that after seeing the Battle for Mars? I wasn't sure I did. I looked at the jagged lines of the city and imagined it disappearing beneath a glowing mushroom of unleashed starfire, imagined millions dying in seconds. The Tani wouldn't be able to penetrate the Earth-Moon defenses as easily as they had the Martian system, and even at Mars they'd lost over half their ships. To overwhelm the defense satellites and the lasers on Earth and the lunar surface, they'd have to have hundreds of ships and be willing to lose most of them. The question was, how fanatical were they? How badly did they want us dead? I thought you'd be out with Anna. I started at the words, so lost in my thoughts that I hadn't noticed her come in. I turned and saw her walking up to me, immaculate in a Dominique Cherval business suit, grown in one piece in a nanite bath. Her hair always looking as if it was naturally perfect, thanks to an invisible microfilament web that controlled every strand. Patrice Damiani could have been my older sister rather than my mother, if you went by looks, which bespoke not entirely comfortable things, both about how closely Mom had been involved in arranging my genes before the implantation, and about how little of my father she'd left in there.
She's recording the personal interview portion of her college application, I said, stepping forward to give her a hug. She'll be stopping by later for dinner.
Mom was solid. You wouldn't think so, looking at her. She was as thin as a rail, but it was all muscle, and she'd never been willing to tell me how much of that is honest physical activity and how much is body sculpt. I'd certainly never actually seen her exercising.
You should be taking advantage of the summer, she told me, kissing me on the cheek before she let me go and fell into a couch by the windows.
She didn't look at the view. She never did, like it didn't mean anything to her.
Pretty soon you'll both be so involved with college, you won't have time for anything else.
Yeah, about that, I began, figuring now would be as good a time as any to bring up the academy, and the fact that I'd submitted my application 3 weeks ago.
If you're going to spring the news about you trying to go behind my back and apply for the service academy, she said dryly, preempting my announcement, don't bother. Her expression wasn't anger or even disappointment. Just a hint of irritation, as if she were tired of talking about the subject.
The system flagged your name and contacted me automatically.
I felt the hackles rise on my neck.
What? I blurted hotly. Why the hell would it flag my name?
She cocked her head slightly as she looked at me, this time showing a little disappointment at how thick I was being.
Because you're my son, she snapped impatiently. Don't pretend you don't know what that means.
She leaned back and crossed her legs, her impatience fading as she regarded me with cool deliberation.
Tyler, you aren't just some nobody chawner living in the underground. People like us don't join the military.
This isn't a feudal kingdom, I said, realizing that I was in a squared-off, combative stance and trying to relax.
We don't have a class system.
She laughed at that, deep and genuine, and I felt myself getting angry again.
Tyler, they may teach you that bullshit in school, she said with her usual bluntness. But there has never been a time when more than two humans lived in the same general area that there wasn't a class system.
There are still laws, I insisted. You can't stop me from going to the academy.
Of course I can.
She waved a hand as if it were less than nothing.
It was a matter of a sentence fragment.
I felt a buzzing in my ears, an abandonment of reason that experience whispered, like a little voice in my ear, was going to lead to me saying things I'd regret.
I turned away from her, concentrating on my breathing, trying not to let her get under my skin, which was just what she was trying to do.
So the news doesn't bother you then?
I asked, still staring away from her out at the city.
You're not worried?
On the contrary, I'm very worried, she confessed. I turned, surprised to hear her being so normal, but her expression was still casual. Consolidated Engineering has hundreds of millions in corporate scrip tied up in the construction of capital ships. I've been given word that President Jameson is putting Admiral Sato in charge of Space Fleet, and his pet cause has always been to transform our strategy from large, easy-to-target cruisers to squadrons of missile cutters to take better advantage of the transition drive.
She shook her head.
We have to get ahead of this if we're going to have time to reconfigure our manufacturing equipment quickly enough to avoid losing investor confidence.
Stock in Consolidated is down 2 points as of this morning. I stared at her, not in disbelief, for this was exactly the response I'd expected, but in exasperation with myself for thinking, even for a second, that my mother might be any other way. "Did it ever occur to you," I asked her, "that if the Tawny do enough damage, none of this..." I waved around at the penthouse demonstratively. "Will matter at all?"
"Don't be melodramatic, Tyler," Mother said. "No one knows more about the capabilities of the Tawny Imperium than the Corporate Council Executive. I receive weekly briefings directly from the President's Security Advisor. If the Tawny could have attacked Earth directly, they would have."
"If you know so much about the Tawny," I shot back, "how come you didn't know they were going to attack Mars?"
She sighed, finally showing exasperation. I felt a flash of satisfaction. It wasn't easy to upset her.
"It's beside the point, Tyler," she said, with a hint of sharpness to her voice. "The military are chess pieces in a game we play."
She stood and stepped nearly nose to nose with me, her height just short of my own 1.8 meters.
"Why do you think there was a truce to begin with? Do you think the admirals didn't want to finish off the Tawny a century ago during the First War? Who do you suppose convinced the President not to pursue our advantage after the victory at Alpha Centauri?"
I frowned, feeling my brows knit in confusion.
"What the hell are you talking about?" I demanded. "Why wouldn't the President want to win the war instead of leaving the Imperium as a military threat?"
"Because as long as they're a threat," she answered, with a twist of her lips that resembled a smile, "then the monopoly exemptions that allow the Corporate Council to exist can remain in place."
"That's treason," I blurted, stepping back from her instinctively.
"That's the real world, my son." She sat back down on the couch. "It's the world you're part of, like it or not. You should accept it because there's nothing you can do to change it." "Good idea," she commented. "Maybe she can calm you down."
I didn't respond, just stalked down the hallway past the theater room and into the atrium. Conrad waited out there, leaning against the wall with a look of indolence that was all camouflage. David Conrad was a tall man, and powerfully built under his fashionable jacket, with swept-back dark hair and brown eyes that always seemed to be squinting suspiciously. I didn't know much about him, but I did know he'd worked in the DSI for years before Mother had hired him as her security chief, and the Department of Security and Intelligence didn't usually employ slackers.
"Going out, Mr. Callis?" he asked, not budging from his position holding up the wall.
I wondered for just a moment why Mother had let me take my father's last name, instead of adopting her more well-known family name of Damiani. Maybe she'd known even then that I'd be a disappointment. I grunted in assent, pressing my palm against the ID plate to call the elevator.
"Have a good time," he said cheerfully, with his ever-present undertone of subtle mockery. "Don't go too far, though."
I glanced at him, eyes narrowing. Had he been listening in to my conversation with Mother, or had she simply briefed him on what I'd done?
"Why?" I asked, challenging. "What would you do if I did?"
He still didn't move,
but it seemed to me that he was somehow closer to me than before, his smile straightening. The elevator arrived with a chime, and the door slid open, but I didn't look away from him.
"What I always do, Mr. Callis," he said, just before I stepped into the car. "My job."
I was still watching those dark eyes as the door closed.
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.